G'day gang, Matt Patterson here, host of this very podcast. I ran a customer support team for a decade, and now I make things like this to help other support pros and anyone else who cares about creating better customer experiences. A group which includes, I trust, you. So thanks heaps for listening. I am really glad you're here. This episode's a little bit different because we're wrapping up season two of the Supportive Podcast. And over this season, I spoke to founders and early leaders of all types of businesses. Software, of course, but also a keyboard manufacturer, a mattress reviewer, and a beer brewer. But they all shared their own stories about the early days of their businesses, why they built their businesses in the way that they did, and what customer service looks like for them then and now. And listening back, I could see similarities between them that I think are worth knowing about. So in this episode, I will share five themes from across the season and what you might learn from them. It's the Supportive. Theme one, being your own customer. There is no better way to really get into the mind of your customer than being your own customer. And my guests this month, every one of them started out by solving their own problems. Oscar McMahon, episode 5, created a whole brewery just to make the kind of beer and the kind of beer company that he and his mate wanted to exist.
So Richard and I, we met when I was working in a pub, and he was just leaving Barron's Brewing at the time. And so we started a craft beer club called Beer Club. Genius.
Strong.
Yeah. And, but I think what was good about that was probably about 16 years ago now. That was just in the back room of a pub. And we started seeing this excitement of people. We'd flick out an email and, you know, 30 people would turn up, and they'd always come, you know, each month. It turned out that we had about 120 people on the mailing list of engaged people that would turn up, and they were really interested. They were really engaged. They were all becoming friends. Heaps of those cohort actually ended up working in the beer industry, which is really cool. But it was that we saw and went, hang on, there is something here. The people are coming together through a love of beer, and there's something exciting here.
Erez Zuckerman, in episode 2, wished that he could buy a fancy pre-built mechanical keyboard, so he made them.
But I wanted the keyboard years later. So I was like, okay, let's, you know, I must not be the only one who doesn't want to, like, you know, assemble it. So let's make something.
And Help Scout itself was built when Nick, Denny, and Jared found the existing options for support tools didn't help them do the support the way they wanted to do it.
We were our first customer, and that was helpful in a number of ways. Well, we were in the early days of Help Scout. We launched right in the middle of the startup accelerator we were in called Techstars. So we were in a co-working space that was full of startups. And so I would literally go startup to startup and be like, what are you using for customer support? Why do you use that tool? Would you be interested in trying our tool? And so it was a really great way to do customer development, believe it or not, because there were literally 20 startups. We were in Techstars with another 10 startups, but there were another 20 startups in the area that I could just kind of go door to door, and I could do interviews with them. I could try to get them to use the product. And so several of our cohort in Techstars, I think, were early customers. Mm-hmm. Some other companies in that space were customers. And so it was so nice to be in that sort of close-knit community where we could get real-time customer feedback in a way that, you know, otherwise would have been really challenging.
When your problem is the same problem that your target customer has, you're already at a huge advantage. You know their pain. You understand what might make that better. And you can talk to them about it in a language they'll understand because you understand it. So if you've got an urge to build a customer-centric business, start with your own needs. It's not magic. You still need to do your own research. The advantage might not last forever. Over time, customers' expectations will change and new problems will arise, but it will give you a hell of a head start. It is much easier to be customer-centric when you can stand next to your customers as a peer instead of looking at them from the outside and trying to discern what they might need. Just make sure it's a real need. being an undercover boss, it's not the same as actually starting at the bottom and working your way up in the business. Theme two, stay close to your customers. Even if you are solving your own problem, as soon as your business grows, you are no longer a perfect proxy for your own customers because they have their own needs, their own wishes. The market will change and new customers that you bring in will expect different things from you over time. This season's guests all spoke about their deliberate efforts to stay as close to their customers as they could, even as their personal jobs took them out of the day-to-day customer contact. At Wistia, Chris Savage and his co-founder Brendan stayed in the support queues for a really long time, well after it was strictly necessary. And then they ensured that their whole team still spent regular time in the support queue.
Years and years and years. 10 years in, we're definitely still doing all hands support. So everyone at Wistia would do support. And we felt that was incredibly important to make sure that people had a close connection to the customer base and their needs.
For young Henrys, customer is a really broad term, as Oscar puts it in episode 5.
We're one of those odd businesses that if you walk into a pub, everyone in that pub is your customer. Yeah. Seller person, bartender, manager, person at the bar, you know. So if you have a delivery driver dropping off beer, if you have a salesperson doing a sales call, if you have a marketing person meeting with their the publican or their marketing manager, trying to have an equal or similar experience across all of those touch points is what we strive to do. So that every time someone engages with someone from Young Henrys, no matter what they're doing, they have a positive experience with a person who is good at what they do, speaks humbly, and is actually a decent person.
He and his team consider every staff member to be in some form of customer service. Another option for staying close to your customers is to deliberately restrict your growth, the kind of growth that might make it unfeasible to maintain that customer contact. David Sparks, the Apple tech educator and content creator, started in episode 7. David chooses to keep his business at a manageable size, one where he can still directly interact with his readers and customers.
And I'm okay with that because I want it to be me. And I do think that is, for someone who's thinking about the AI revolution, having a personal relationship with your customers is a great thing. And just a human touch to it. I think that is important. I think a lot of humans want that. And so lean into it.
David does use AI tools to do customer lookups and to action what he calls donkey work, like password resets, but he never lets AI email his customers. He holds on to that connection personally. If you're on a support team, staying connected is relatively easier. Although even then, it's important to remember, the larger your customer base, the smaller the percentage of customers you'll ever personally connect with. But if you're a leader and you're outside of direct support, consider how you can hold on to that customer connection. Can you still do a shift or two in the queue? Can you listen to some sales calls? Can you just go and hang out where your customers hang out? It matters. Theme three, company values that drive actions. Look, I want to be honest with you. I have had some pretty mixed experiences with company values over the years. In different jobs, they always sound good in theory, but then in practice, they're often just a slightly more corporate-sounding live, laugh, love poster stuck on the office wall. Like, you can't disagree with them, but way too often, nobody is actually live, laugh, loving like that in the office, are they? Values that are not backed up by tangible actions are pointless at best. And I don't want to tell you that every company in this season has always lived its stated values in every situation. Of course they haven't. It's just not possible. And I've worked inside Help Scout, obviously, and it's not perfect either. But then none of us can claim to be perfect in our own lives, can we? If you can, do not email me. I don't believe you. But what I did hear repeatedly through this season was examples of where companies did use their values to help them make tough calls, to do things that might be unexpected in our heavily capitalist society. Here's Todd from YNAB explaining why they do not automatically charge customer credit cards when the free trial ends.
My sweet spot is if it's aligned with values and a good pragmatic choice. So I think that is aligned with our way, what we want the customer experience to be, which is that I can just enter into this free trial and not have to worry about that end of it. I can just explore what I'm trying to learn, what these folks are trying to teach me, how this product works. Practically speaking, I think that helps more people. It removes a bit of friction from that early process. People are just more likely to give it a try.
And at Wistia, the team turned down taking on big VC dollars, not because they lacked ambition, but because they wanted to hold on to the culture of the company that they had built, and they were really aware of the risks of losing that culture.
But I look at the culture as like the heart and soul of what allows us to do what we do. And yeah, I mean, I think knowing what I know now, could I raise money and protect the culture? I think so. But it would have just, if I had done it 5 years in, I don't think we would have protected it the same way.
At Young Henry's, which is a B Corp certified brewery, living the values means they spend a whole lot of time and investor money on researching and building things like algae bioreactors, things that make brewing more environmentally sustainable.
Our shareholder collective love the algae project. They love Young Henry's and have always been supportive of, you know, these two different things coexisting. I think that there's something, you know, in line with B Corp certification, you know, sustainable practices wherever we can, and the algae project. None of those in and of themselves will make someone say, I'm going to just drink Young Henry's for the rest of my life. I don't believe that. Mm. It could be something which piques people's interest and then they could consider us for sure. I think it's more likely that those things are values that keep our existing customer base with us. Mm. They say, well, you know, there are a couple of ways you can give value to a customer, right? You can drop your prices or you can do something valuable.
Wherever you work, you probably have at least some nominal values. But are those values showing up in company decision-making? Are there things your company is not doing where it would conflict with those values? It's only when they're put to the test and adapted and applied under pressure do the values really mean something. What is it that you would not do in your situation? Theme 4 is growth, but not at all costs. Look, when things stop growing, then pretty quickly, they also stop living. You can just ask the ficus, which is down here in my office. Well, you could if it wasn't dead. But on the other hand, letting things grow without constraint, it causes problems too. I mean, that's how Australia ended up full of rabbits and cane toads.
Well, that's what happens when you introduce foreign species into an ecosystem that can't handle them.
But there are lots of different ways to grow. My guests this season, they all told some version of deliberately shaping their growth. YNAB are bootstrapped and debt-free by design. And Todd sees that as a form of freedom for the business.
Quite proud to be bootstrapped, profitable, debt-free. It not only because it reflects sort of our philosophy on money that we would like to teach to people, but what you get out of it, what you get out of operating that way is that, I used the word agency earlier, the agency to be creative, to break something down, to come in on a Monday and say, you know what, I think we made a mistake on Friday. Let's start it again.
Young Henry's is really small compared to the multinational brewers that they compete with. But for Oscar, that means maneuverability and experimentation. And they don't need to please everyone, so they can focus on pleasing the people that they most resonate with.
It's quite freeing to take that thought. Like, we don't have to hit everybody, you know? I think we know our brand quite well, and so we know our customers quite well.
Nick Francis talked about how the growth at Help Scout has changed the way that the team works and the way that the products are designed and built, but hasn't changed ultimately what Help Scout is for or why it exists.
And
Yeah, we have not had a single significant pivot in our history. Yeah. So the pitch that we gave 14 years ago at Techstars is the same pitch today.
If you want to stay in business, then yeah, growth is not optional. But it doesn't have to mean taking on huge debts or hiring hundreds or thousands of people. Growth can come from getting better at serving more people with the same small company or doing more of the things that you care most about as a business. And theme five is listening to support signals. Customer support is often understood as just a river of questions, but it's not just questions, is it? Because every time somebody contacts you for help, they're also sharing something with you, and that might be information just about the words and the phrases that they use to describe the problem you're trying to solve. It might be the way they think about your competitors or an issue that they wish your product would address for them. And if your support team only ever answers the questions that they are presented with, then all of that additional information can be lost. It just drifts away into the depths of your support archives. But the most effective customer-centric teams capture and process and, importantly, put to use all of that valuable information. At mattress review website NapLab, the founder, Derek Hales, uses reader complaints as a source of insight for himself. Someone bought a mattress based on his recommendation and they hate it? Well, was the review wrong? What's the context?
Certainly. You know, just as we hear from people that have great experiences, you know, we have people that will reach out because they've had a bad experience. They purchased something that we recommended and their experience didn't match what we said in the review. And, you know, I do my best to help those people just like anybody else. And so try to understand, okay, well, why didn't they have a good experience? Was our review wrong? Was the mattress they received defective? Did they have some sort of mitigating circumstance in terms of preferences or body type that could be making this worse?
At YNAB, the support team is a source of customer knowledge for the rest of the company. They pass information back and they put it into the form of insights and documentation and suggestions.
I mean, the support team at YNAB maintains more internal and external documentation maybe than anyone else. And they, you know, produce more public-facing words, whether it's in print, in a chat, in a video that they record for a customer, which is one of my favorite things that we do.
And at HelpScout, whole company support means that everyone in every department hears directly from customers, at least some of the time. And some of the best insights come from engineers or designers or other people who are not usually in the support queue, hearing a customer directly describe their confusion, and they have their own perspective broadened. If you want to be customer-centric, then make sure that your company's ears and eyes are always open to information from your customers. They want to share it with you. You just have to be willing to listen. The reading the CSAT and the response time reports, it's only ever going to get you a shadow of the much broader reality that is the support queue. So those are the five themes that I see looking back on this season of The Supportive. Seven different companies, but all of them quite thoughtful in staying close to their customers, and that has shaped the way that they do business. And when I ran a support team myself, and we got high CSAT ratings, I'd sometimes tell the team, look, if we were all to quit here and go work down the road in a bank or a telecoms company, I bet we would get much worse results. And I wasn't trying to be a downer, just trying to recognize that high quality service is about so much more than the effort and the skill of the frontline support people. It's all about that whole company actually caring about the customer experience, about investing in tools, investing in people to craft that experience, committing to do the hard work over years and years of time. It might mean turning down some real income to try and stay true to a company culture. It might mean spending time in the support queue, even when you're the CEO and you've got much more expensive and important things to do in the short term. It's making the right hiring choices and the right product design choices and investing in training. And ultimately, it's about the people who are at the top caring about what is happening down at the edges of the company. Being customer-centric over long periods, it's not easy, but it's not impossibly hard either. It does take deliberate and consistent effort. And I want to thank all of my guests this season for discussing all of that with me. Nick and Denny and Jared from HelpScout, Erez at ZSA, Chris from Wistia, Todd at YNAB, Oscar at Young Henry's, Derek at NapLab, and David, aka Max Sparky. And if you missed any of those episodes, go and find them in the feed, have a listen. I think it'll be worth your time. Maybe pick one and send it passive-aggressively to your boss if you need them to change their thinking a little bit. But that ends season two. Season three is almost here. This time around, I'm not talking to founders and CEOs. We're going back to the front lines, talking to support pros specifically about the work and the attitudes of customer support. So if you have comments or questions or dad jokes to send me, I want to hear them all. Email thesupportive@helpscout.com. And if you can take 2 minutes out of your life to rate the podcast in iTunes or Spotify, please do. I will thank you for that. And I'll thank you for listening and for caring about your customers. See you back here very soon.